Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. I'm joined today by author Stephanie Levinston of the book Joining Joni, Staying Connected to Your Loved One Through Dementia and Beyond. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Matt. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, we're happy to have you. Dementia is one of those conditions that touches a lot of us. I know that I have a personal history where my grandmother went through it, and you know, some of us who watched her go through it, it was so heartbreaking. So we really appreciate you coming on the show today and talking about a topic that is so near and dear to all of us. And I wanted to ask you, who is Joni?
Joni is my mom, and she actually began her journey through dementia 15 years prior to her passing. She passed about 4 years ago. And her type of dementia is one that is less common, though they are getting better at diagnosing it. And it does affect people younger and younger. We are definitely seeing a trend where people are showing dementia symptoms at younger ages than what we would typically expect in your 80s or 90s, for example.
So what was it that you first started to notice about your mom?
With her type of dementia, what was common in the beginning were extreme mood swings and mood changes. She would definitely have more trouble with word finding, though her social communication skills were so strong that she was able to sort of circumlocute or find the right words that go around the word to describe the one that was giving her trouble. So it was only those of us that were really close with her that picked up on these subtle shifts in the beginning. And then, of course, as it progressed, it gets much more significant where you really can't hide the symptoms any longer.
And that's what we learned about my grandma was we were having a lot of trouble kind of communicating with her. Is there anything in your background that maybe gave you a little bit of an advantage in communicating with people with dementia?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I have 20 years of clinical experience as a speech pathologist. I've worked in lots of different medical settings with individuals who have cognitive impairments, memory impairments, all sorts of things going on with the brain or with their speech or their swallowing that we would work on in the clinical setting. So I'm very familiar, and even at that time was very familiar with what some of her symptoms were, though we actually did not receive a proper diagnosis until she was more than 5 years into her dementia, which is common, especially for those that are showing signs and symptoms at younger ages. The doctors aren't yet as well versed as could be in identifying that dementia could be a part of this. We don't tend to think of dementia with people who are in their 40s and 50s.
Wow, so she was that young. And it was really, could you give us an example of what a mood swing would entail? I mean, would you attribute it to something else?
Yeah, well, it was often attributed to me. I tended to have that role in the family of the one who could agitate mom. So oftentimes when she would have a severe mood swing, when things would be fine one moment and then she would be just reacting in a way that didn't really fit the situation. So she might yell or get very sad or shout about something or express anger. It was oftentimes directed back to what did I say or do that might have elicited that. It can be a very confusing time, and it definitely was a time where resentments were building. And this is not uncommon either. Even when we know our loved one's diagnosis, it doesn't make it easier necessarily to weather the shifts and the changes that are coming from them and that we will have to join them in their journey. But it can actually be a point, and this is the whole point of my book, is showing others that your relationship with your loved one will change. Dementia does change everything, but you do not have to disconnect. There are so many beautiful ways to stay connected through communication, through humor, through watching your loved one with their more subtle signals of what they're wanting to communicate with you, even when their words and their language are not able to match up anymore.
And that's so interesting, because we started to lose that. We started to lose the ability to communicate in a way that she would understand, my grandma would understand. And we started to get a little bit frustrated with her. And not so much me, but the people that were caring for her every day. So how do you do that when somebody that you've been so close to and depended on for so long, all of a sudden these communications or memory barriers or other cognitive barriers are put up? How do you break down those walls and still have a meaningful relationship and through communication?
That's such an excellent question. And so the first thing that I think is really essential is to recognize that things have changed, period. There is absolutely nothing that is within your control about the fact that your loved one will continue to decline. And so I recommend getting really clear on what is your priority through this transition. If you wish to stay connected and find forms of communication that work now, rather than look back and see what is no longer working or what faculties they have lost and the sadness and grief of knowing that they're going to lose more and more of those, which can send you completely in the opposite direction of what you are desiring. For me, for example, what I desired was to stay connected with my mom. I knew that I was going to need to get creative and find some other avenues to join her in her experience. And it didn't mean that her experience had to be my experience. I could simply honor that this was very real to her right now. So for example, she might say that she was freezing and I live in Florida and it could be 90 degrees outside. And one big mistake a lot of us make in interacting with someone with dementia is we will try to reorient them to what is true or to reality, which is such a waste of time. That's the biggest waste of time. Wow. Because they enter into an argument with somebody and that's totally unnecessary. And then both of you end up leaving that communication interaction feeling worse. So if my mother felt cold and it was 90 degrees outside, I did something revolutionary. I would go get her a jacket. And that is honoring what she's communicating. It's real for her right now. Now, she might have been trying to say it's hot out, but I'm going to honor wherever she's at and however she's expressing herself. I'd come out with a jacket, and oftentimes she'd put it on. She really was cold. And if it turned out that her communication was not as she had meant it to be, and she was actually trying to say it was hot, and out I came with the jacket, then we would have a good laugh about that. She'd look at me like I was crazy and say, "What are you doing with that? It's hot out here." And we would giggle. And that's a way to stay connected.
No, that's great because, you know, I know that was a big source of frustration for my grandma's caregivers, you know, and as they saw her do, I remember the first thing they noticed, my grandmother was this wonderful Italian cook and she went to make cookies one day and they turned out like a cake. And that's how everybody started to know she was kind of drifting a little bit. Mm. And instead of supporting her, they were like, you know, "Mom, what are you doing? You know, what happened?"
Yeah.
And so that's such powerful advice to, I don't want to say play along, but recognize that they might not have the right words or the right expression and to just go with it and laugh at the end.
Yes, exactly. There were many times when my mother and I would have conversations that were completely void of any meaning, lots of times, because, you know, the pathways in the brain with dementia start to break apart, the synapses, and, you know, I don't want to get too clinical about it, but they just start to disconnect. And so she would want to tell me something, or I would be sharing maybe a story with her, and she would want to participate in that, but her part of the participation didn't make sense with what she was trying to communicate. And so much of the time, I would just maintain eye contact with her and nod and say, I would, even when it didn't make sense, I would say, "Exactly." And then I'd go on with my story, because what's important to my mom in those moments was to feel part of the interaction, to feel as though she was bringing something of value. And the truth is, she was. she was attending and she was doing her darndest to be present for it and as involved in it as she could. And just because her verbal expression could not match up with mine or what hers used to be, it didn't mean that our interaction didn't have any meaning or connection, quite the opposite. So I would just kind of follow her flow, and we would have some moments where she would say something and I would say, I think I understand what you mean, and I would try to reflect back what she meant, and I would miss it, and then she would try again, and by the end of this exchange we would be rolling on the floor because there really isn't anything else to do but laugh or cry, I suppose. But it's really important to bring a high, kind of an upbeat, high vibration to the experience for your loved one, because what's important is for the remainder of the time that they are here on Earth, what's important to me is that they experience as much positive interaction, as much loving exchange, and as much connection as possible.
Now, do you feel that by maintaining that connection, you know, was it easier for your mom to stay, for lack of better terms, was it easier for your mom to still recognize you, or at a certain point did she start drifting away from even those connections that you tried to maintain?
Yeah, no, she definitely drifted. That is just inherent with dementia. And I remember the first time that it was apparent that she had disconnected from my role as her daughter. I was driving her to a facility, basically just a day facility where they had activities for individuals like her. And it was our first time trying it. We actually didn't end up working out where we stayed there, but I wanted to try to get her as much stimulation and social interaction as possible with others. On our way there, we were chatting and she said to me, why is it that my dad keeps saying that you're my daughter? And I sort of was stunned because there was a lot of things that had shifted at that point and a lot of things that we were in the process of losing with her. But I wasn't quite there in recognizing that her understanding of my role with her was that different. And so luckily I got to a place of curiosity pretty quickly, and I said, well, what do I feel like to you? What does my relationship to you feel like? How do you think of it? And she said, well, you're my friend. You're my best friend. And I decided in that moment that was going to be perfectly fine with me.
Wow.
So I didn't correct her. And that's another thing I would really hit home here with my messaging, is that try as often as possible not to correct your loved one in whatever they're expressing, for a couple reasons. One is because ultimately it doesn't matter to do so. And two is because if you dig a little deeper and ask the question, like I said, well, who am I to you, or what does this relationship feel like, you just might get a gift. And that was a real gift that my mom received me as her friend. I didn't need to be felt as her daughter. Goodness knows there was a lot of complexity there with the mother-daughter relationship. So I'll take it. Best friend, that's a great label.
That is just amazing, because so many of us take ownership, you know, and it's not about what the person with dementia is going through. It's about how we feel about the person going through dementia and how they relate to us. That is just powerful advice, because, you know, I was always the favorite grandson, or in my own mind at least. And, you know, at a certain point, I became unrecognizable to my grandma. And that really hurt me. And I think that I always wanted to remember her as my grandma and in that relationship. And I don't think I was ever able to embrace the change. Mm-hmm. Being clinical, do you have any suggestions or any tips for embracing that change and being able to transition? You went from daughter to best friend. Did you have those same kind of emotions?
Oh, sure. The emotions are always going to be there. So I wouldn't for a moment pretend that they're not. There was an emotion of devastation when I recognized that we were now moving in that direction, where I was going to be less and less familiar to her. And first it came simply as a new label of friend rather than daughter. But here's what I would suggest, because this will, you know, this is very common. This is part of dementia. It's just how it progresses. When you feel like you are no longer recognized by your loved one, I encourage you to move in even closer, literally and figuratively. Move closer to them physically. Place your hand on their hand if they're okay being touched, or on their back or on their leg. Make more physical connection and close up the space between you. Because what you're doing by doing that is you are more powerfully engaging them in a way that they can more easily sense and feel than just having a conversation across the table where there is a feeling of space and of disconnect. The other thing I would recommend is remind yourself of what your desire is. It all comes back to what's the priority right now in this exchange. Yes, it's heavy-hearted. It's so sad when I'm no longer familiar to this person, but if I can still find a place within them where they feel trusting and where they feel the love that I'm emanating and where they feel that the desire is there for me to show and share loving energy with them, then that's kind of the purpose. And you watch their eyes. Right? There's a lot of information that comes through people's eyes, and we tend not to hold eye contact for long enough to get there. With someone with dementia, if you can get into their eyes and see, you'll see that you are still there deeply within them, and that no matter what their memory is of you or what their thinking is of you at that given time, doesn't matter, because what is important is what goes deeper, what goes beyond that.
That was great advice. I'm here with Stephanie Levinson, author of Joining Joni, Staying Connected to Your Loved One Through Dementia and Beyond. And I wanted you to talk just a little bit more about the book. Is this book a memoir about this relationship, or what could our readers expect about Joining Joni?
Yeah, so it is. It's part memoir and part guide. And what I have done is I've taken the things, the lessons that were most important that I have pulled from this process with my mom. And I have included all of them in the book. And I have included the ways that I've made mistakes in this so that other people do not have to do the same mistakes that I did. They're very common mistakes. You've even mentioned a few of them already. And I've made it very personal to me. So I've told you where I have misstepped and how that was received. And I show what other options are. I've also shown where I have gone right with this, because there are a lot of ways that I feel it wasn't perfect, but there are a lot of ways that I know I served my mother very powerfully in my role with her by offering up these tidbits of information and this wisdom that seemed to just come right through the dementia process. Okay.
Speaking of that process, is there anything else while she was going through this transition that kind of woke up inside you and led you down a different path, or maybe you realized some connection that you didn't know was there before, or some skill?
Yes, absolutely. So that was one of the biggest gifts in my mom's dementia journey, was that what it did for me was it absolutely popped the lid off of my spirituality and my own spiritual connection. So as she was progressing and communication was getting more and more difficult, and I could no longer just simply apply my clinical knowledge to stay connected to her, I needed to find something else, something deeper, something more meaningful that would allow me to remain in her world in the way that felt good to both of us. And so I relied on spiritual connection, which I did not even know at that time was an option. But I happened to have met a friend who was a channel, meaning she brought forward messages from the divine perspective. And in the circles that she and I created together, and in my exposure to that, I started to take my own classes on learning how to be a channel. And it was for personal use, and now of course it's for professional use, but at that time I really wanted to know that I could remain with my mother as long as possible, no matter what was taking place for her clinically or in her brain space. And the spirit is that part of ourselves, that huge, eternal part of ourselves that we can connect with within ourselves and with one another. And I found that to be such a turning point in my own evolution and now in what I do professionally. It's been a total shift. I left my work as a speech pathologist, and now I'm doing, you know, readings professionally. I'm an intuitive channel, and I am also a spiritual coach teaching others how to return to that voice within themselves, that voice of wisdom, that inner voice. It's very, very powerful.
And we want to get more into that, but we also want to know, is any of that transition from being present with a person to more of a channeled relationship in the book or a spiritual relationship in the book?
Yes, I do. It's a funny thing you asked that, because initially when I wrote the book, the first draft of it, I sent out to some of my community and said, please let me know. It wasn't actually the first draft I sent out. This was a final draft that I sent out to my community, fully expecting that it was in its final form. And I had actually eliminated the spiritual pieces completely. Didn't even write anything spiritual related in the book. And the reason why was because in my mind at that time, I felt like I'm writing the book for someone like my father, who can use this stuff, can immediately apply these techniques and suggestions and benefit from them, and who doesn't really subscribe to, you know, what you might call the spiritual language or woo-woo, something of that nature. So I had left it out. And my community wrote me back with feedback and said, hold on a second. Where is the truth about you in here? Where is the truth about what you do spiritually and what you bring to so many others and how you grew closer with your mother, even with dementia, because of the spiritual connection? So I acquiesced. I recognized, okay, that's not going to fly, and that's not actually the whole truth. So I now the book is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I have put in there what my journey has been. I have put in there how I use spirit to, even now that she has transitioned, even now I'm connected to my mom. There is constant communication going on between us. So yes, that's a great question, and that's the answer.
Well, and that's the stuff that, you know, not only do you have strategies for while you're going through it, but strategies for staying connected once they're gone. And that's something we all want to do on very different levels. And transition, you have a history of empowering women and working kind of in that space. Is channeling a way to empower somebody who wants to stay connected, or what does that process look like, and how can people be involved with that?
Yes. So it's such an empowering way to have what I believe we're all craving right now, which is an inner guidance that's so powerful that we don't question it, to have such a level of confidence that inner voice that's meant to guide us is truly guiding us, that we step out of our own way and we allow that, and that we also are present to miracles that are happening all of the time. A lot of us, we're always experiencing them, but we're not always present to them. And so when we don't notice, then we believe they're not happening. And so, for example, if you are wanting to create something in your life and you need some help with it, and you put the request out there, even just in your own mind saying, I really like some support with this, if you pay attention, in short order, somebody does come forward to offer you support with that. This has been my experience time and again. And when I talk with other people, when they are present, and that means not overly scheduled, not overly busy, and not overly distracted, you can really understand how much the universe is conspiring for you to help you, to unfold your path with you. And so the process to that, I would say, begins, and I talk about this throughout the book, begins and ends with self-care. You cannot be a good caregiver, a good companion, a good daughter or son or grandson or granddaughter to your loved one who has dementia if you are neglecting your own needs. When you neglect your own needs, you are essentially disconnecting from your own inner voice and from spirit in general. And so there can be no thriving in that space. So I talk a lot in my book about what self-care looks like, how you can start the process of it. It is absolutely something that very naturally falls by the wayside when you find yourself in a caregiving position for somebody else, or even as a parent. Our self-care flies right out the window because of the needs of our children and our families. So this is something I want to bring everybody back to, is this notion that you first, so you can be the highest, best version of yourself for others.
And that's something I struggle with on a daily basis, you know, being the parent of two young children and maybe ignoring the signs that the universe is trying to show me. You know, do you offer any kind of coaching for somebody like me that maybe puts barriers up in front of myself to stay on a routine and not take those cues?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing I recommend doing is coming and getting some paper and a pencil and coming up with a list of 25 things that bring you delight. And so these are just things you love. They could be things you love to eat, things you love to do, people you love to spend time with, where you might want to go on a vacation. 25 things that bring you joy and delight. Keep some of them simple and then go really big with other ones. So for my list, for example, yoga is on there. Time in nature is on there. Time spent playing with my dogs is on there. Time with my kids is on there. Exercise of other forms as well. Dark chocolate always makes me and then time with my girlfriends, phone conversations, as well as, you know, what would be maybe my dream vacation, something like that would go on there too. And then every single day, pick two items from that list that you can accomplish and do them. That is the quickest reset to get you back in alignment with your self-worth, your self-value, your self-love by doing those things. That's the greatest way to start. And what you will find, if you're like me, is that as I began that journey back to caring for myself in those ways, I was needing, now two things were not enough. I was needing more and more and more. And now it's the type of situation where solitude for me is, I must have that every day in some way. I don't necessarily have to be meditating, though I highly, highly recommend it, but having time alone where nobody's talking, where there are no demands placed on me and I can retreat is absolutely essential, and it's absolutely essential for anybody finding themselves in the caregiving role, because you are constantly having to attend to the needs of another, and that's very draining. You have to find some time and some moments for replenishment.
Now, I used to, when I was younger, I used to be able to meditate and find that quiet space. And as I've got older, I found that all my responsibilities, even when I try to take that time and recenter myself, I can't shut off that voice inside my head for the things that I still have to do. Do you have any way, if you try to find that piece of self, Do you have any strategies for shutting off that voice that won't turn off?
Yes. Yes. So a lot of times I actually hesitate to use the word meditation, because so many people that I know and a lot of my clients say, I've tried that and I'm failing miserably. And so, that's what meditation is. And I just reframe it with language. So instead, I would prefer to call it deep listening. And so the goal is not necessarily to get in an ultimate place of complete peace, because we are not very practiced at that. We are not monks. It's very hard to achieve. So what the goal is in the practice of deep listening is to simply get even a nanosecond of time measurement in between your thoughts. So the thoughts spin, right? They just come through and they come through and they come through, one right after the other on top of the other, it seems. If through your practice of focusing inward, focusing on your breath, or having a mantra, which I highly recommend, or even using mala beads, which I can talk about, is something that you can do to start that slowing down process and not have the expectation that you're going to reach nirvana, that you're going to absolutely experience bliss and a total quiet state of mind, but that what you're actually going for is just a little bit of space between your thoughts, then you have done that successfully, and I would celebrate the hell out of it.
That is great advice. As we're starting to wind down the podcast here, how can people connect with you?
So I have a website. It's www.stephanielevinston.com. And I also have a Facebook business page, which is called Stephanie Levinston Intuitive Channel. You can connect with me on there as well. And I do, for those in those women who are interested in diving deep with spiritual practice, I have a group on Facebook called Sacred Soul Sisterhood, where I post a lot of my intuitive musings and sharings in there as well.
And I've seen some of your Facebook videos. They're just like this podcast. You are just such a wealth of information and advice and just great healing energy. I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. All the links you mentioned are going to be in the show notes, where you can see on patientactivationnetwork.com. So you'll be able to connect with Stephanie there. Stephanie, thank you so much. Do you have any closing thoughts, anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Just the notion that you are worthy and that your attention to yourself is essential for thriving. And thank you so much, Matt. I really enjoyed connecting with you.
We really enjoyed having you here. Once again, her name is Stephanie Levinson. She's the author of Joining Joni, Staying Connected to Your Loved One Through Dementia and Beyond. If you're interested in that book, it's available on Amazon.com. I am Matt Cavallo. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and stay tuned for another inspirational story.